Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 3rd, 2016. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with a feature article with this title, Reunion Rekindles Memories. And actually, there's a secondary title, which is Veterans Lost Dog Tag Returned 45 Years Later. The article was written by Huey Freeman. Roger Randall was hunting for pheasant near Macon a few months after he returned home from his overseas hitch in the Army during the Vietnam War, most likely in the fall of 1971. He dropped his dog tag somewhere out there, maybe near a vacant house where he had parked. 45 years later, a farmer found that thin stainless steel tag, 2 inches long by 1 1/8 inches wide, close to where a house had once stood. Rather than discarding it, the farmer turned it over to Moequa Police Chief Robert Mate Maynard, who handed it off to Macon County Sheriff Thomas Schneider. With the help of the county's Veterans Assistance Commission, Schneider performed a little research about Randall. He discovered that he served during the Vietnam War era and attained the rank of specialist. Schneider, who doesn't hide his admiration for military veterans, had a plaque made up for Randall, which included the dates of his service and this statement: "Your dog tag may have been lost. Your service was never forgotten." Randall was working on the shed about 60 yards behind his house when he spotted a monster-sized black truck pull up in his driveway. Two lawmen, Schneider and Lieutenant John Butts, got out of the truck. He had no idea what they were doing at his house. Quote, "He showed me my dog tag," Randall said. Then he said, "I want you to have this plaque." Randall, who enlisted when he was 19 after his brother Clayton and a good friend had been drafted into the Army, has never received much recognition for his service. In 1969, when Randall told a recruiter he wanted to serve in the Army, the war was unpopular among most young people. The recruiter told him it was unusual for someone to volunteer at that time. Ironically, the young man who was willing to serve in Vietnam was sent instead to South Korea, where he served for 14 months. There was some occasional shooting, including a few U.S. soldiers killed in action shortly before his arrival, but nothing like the magnitude of the combat action in nearby Vietnam. Quote, "I served in a combat zone in the DMZ, Demilitarized Zone, separating North and South Korea," Randall said. "We were getting ready to go to combat in Cambodia. We were on red alert. They were getting ready to send us." At that time, news hit the states that American troops had been fighting in Cambodia, which sent the anti-war movement into a frenzy of demonstrations. Orders for more troops in the region were canceled. Although he served as a weapons instructor in the storied 7th Infantry Division, Randall has not accepted recognition as a Vietnam veteran, such as attending the welcome home ceremonies held in Decatur for the past 5 years. Randall was sent for basic and advanced training to Fort Ord near Monterey, California. One of his fondest memories was meeting one of the all-time great rock singers on a commercial plane ride from Los Angeles to Monterey. One of his fellow soldiers was playing a tape of a Janis Joplin song when Janis herself spoke up from a nearby seat. "How do you like my new song?" she said. Randall approached her for an autograph and found her to be a warm, friendly young lady. He was sad to hear of her death a few months later. Randall later passed on that autograph to his daughter, Stacy, a singer-songwriter who lives in Nashville. After the sheriff and his right-hand man presented Randall with the plaque and his lost dog tag April 14th, he wanted to let everyone know how much he appreciated it. He wrote a letter to the editor in which he said, "Such a heartfelt, caring gesture made this aging soldier instantly remember why he had decided as a young man to enlist in the Army and leave home to serve his country." Elaine Robertson, Randall's sister, said he remembered when his brother Bugs, as Roger was known, wanted to join their brother in Vietnam. As she recalled, the Army told their family that they were not allowing two brothers to serve in country at that time. "It was a very dramatic time for all of us," said Robertson, who graduated from Macon High School, as did all her siblings. "We lost high school friends. You either went to college or you went to Vietnam. I'm so proud of both my brothers. They loved this country and fulfilled wherever they were asked to serve." She said she appreciated what Schneider did. Quote, "This guy went way out of his way with a plaque," Robertson said. "Just to hand it back would have been sufficient. I was so thrilled. This sheriff was kind enough to go way out of his way to recognize my brother." There are four photos that accompany this article. One shows Mr. Randall pictured with the Macon County Sheriff Thomas Schneider and Lieutenant John Butts, and he's holding the plaque and the dog tag as they stand smiling and proud behind him. Then there is a close-up of the dog tag, which was discovered 45 years after he lost it. And it just gives his name, Randall Roger D., O positive Lutheran. And the dog tag looks pretty beat up, but you can still read it. Then there's a picture of him again holding his military dog tag towards the camera. Finally, someone submitted a photo to the Herald and Review that shows a picture of Roger Randall in South Korea in 1970 during his military service during the Vietnam War era. He's in uniform and he's carrying a large weapon on his shoulder. I'm sorry, I couldn't tell you what it is. The word bazooka comes to mind, but I don't know if that's what it is. Anyway, it's a very impressive set of photographs. Also on the first page, we find this article about government and politics written by Tony Reed. The headline is "Meeting Urges Fair State Budget." Dateline Decatur. Living with three young children and no power, Amber Ginger dreams of moving out of Illinois and finding a state with a working budget that can help poor people. She told her family's story Monday evening at the Old King's Orchard Community Center in Decatur during a meeting aimed at putting pressure on lawmakers and Governor Bruce Rauner to pass a state budget. Ginger, who said her power has been cut off, noted programs used to help poor families pay power bills have been crippled by the state's 10-month budget stalemate. She also said one of her children, she has boys ages 11, 8, and 5, can't get medicine he needs because state programs that help fund his health care have dried up. Quote, "If I could, I'd move out of Illinois in a heartbeat," said Ginger, 32. "Poor people can't get no help here." Monday's meeting highlighted several family situations, such as Ginger's, with the aim of shaming lawmakers into doing something. The meeting was led by Cheryl Flowers, an organizer with the Grassroots Collaborative Organization, which tries to assist poor families. Flowers urged the public to begin a letter-writing campaign to newspapers and anybody in a position of influence to tell Governor Rauner and legislators they must act before the legislative session ends May 31st. She also advocated holding budget crisis workshops to warn voters about the state's absent budget and to try to generate more pressure to fix it. Quote, "You need to know what is going on," said Flowers. "You need to get mad. You need to get angry." Flowers also went further, saying the state doesn't need just any budget deal. It needs one that distributes resources fairly. And that's not been the case so far. Quote, "Illinois has the fifth largest economy in the country, but we rank 47th in spending on public services," she said. Now shouting, she cried, "What do we want?" And a handful of participants in the meeting, some carrying budget protest signs, chanted back, "A fair budget. When do we want it? Now." Lisa Stanley, Decatur Township Supervisor, said her job introduces her to the most vulnerable people in the community who face losing state-funded programs designed to help them get back on their feet. Quote, "If they are not able to access any of these resources, what do they do?" she asked. "They stay on assistance. That is a no-win to our taxpayers and a no-win to our community. So we really need to urge our legislators to work on a budget." After Monday's meeting, when the budget chants had faded and the TV lights had been turned off, Amber Ginger prepared to make her way back to her home in the dark. She wasn't filled with hope that letters and protests will turn on any lights in the state capitol. We can try, and we can hope and pray and have faith in God, she added. But in my heart of hearts, I'm not expecting much. A photograph depicts Decatur Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley at a podium speaking at a meeting to protest the lack of a state budget. And behind her stand several people with signs, Grassroots Collaborative, Building a Community, Labor Movement for Equity and Justice. And it's a diverse gathering of people. Also on the first page, we find this article of local interest, Railroad on Board to Support Midwest Inland Port. And this was written by Chris Lusfardi, Dateline Decatur. One of the nation's largest railroads pledged its support Monday to developing the Midwest Inland Port in Decatur. CN, which is one of three Class 1 railroads providing service to Decatur businesses, has joined the Strategic Development Coalition for the Port. Other members of the development group include Archer Daniels Midland Company, Ameren Illinois, Decatur Memorial Hospital, Clayco, Omnitrax, and the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. The railroad can help products from its customers in the Decatur area reach destinations around the globe, said John Orr, CN's Senior Vice President, Southern Region. Quote, they can extend their reach all over the world, Orr said. Our reach is second to none. The company, with headquarters in Montreal, Canada, has already spent $750 million to expand ways for shipments to bypass Chicago, Orr said. Avoiding the congestion in the Chicago area has been one of the main selling points to encourage use of the transportation infrastructure in Decatur. As a result of going around Chicago, Orr said the railroad can offer more predictable transit times for shipments and avoid delays that can sometimes last days or even weeks. The concept of the Midwest Inland Port was created with ADM's intermodal rail facility as its centerpiece, said Dennis Whalen, ADM's Vice President of Intermodal Transportation. The conversion of a former CN rail yard into the intermodal ramp started about 6 years ago when ADM bought the property, Whalen said. Quote, the Midwest Inland Port is showing signs of being an economic driver as a new platform for growth into emerging markets around the globe, Whalen said. We see many possibilities ahead. Having CN on board brings expanded recognition and credibility to efforts in further developing the area's transportation network, said Larry Altenbaumer, executive director of the Midwest Inland Port. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf noted more containers filled the facility than the last time she was there. It is a sign of what can benefit Decatur in the future, she said. It is the best opportunity we've had in decades, Moore Wolf said. Each container tells a story of the benefits extending into the community coming from the use of the ramp, Orr said. Rail access is one of the features used in marketing Decatur to potential businesses, said Ryan McCrady, Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County President. McCrady said other highlights include affordable utility rates, connections to highways, and the training of the area's workforce. He said working with CN is a key step forward in bringing more imports into the country through Decatur. We turn now to some articles on A3. Government and politics is the topic of this one, written by Allison Petty. And the headline reads, Residency Resolution Headed to City Council. Decatur City Council members want city workers to live in the city limits and are likely to support a resolution to that effect. Council members continued discussing residency requirements during a study session Monday, ultimately directing City Manager Tim Gleason to bring the resolution to the May 16th meeting. The issue of residency is complicated because requirements are defined in union contracts for police, fire, and American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees workers. The new resolution would not be binding for the represented employees, but several council members also said they wanted to require new hires who are not represented by a union to live in the city limits. Gleason said he would begin discussions with the groups during regular labor management meetings and the issue would be a priority in upcoming contract negotiations. Quote, "You know, I'd like everybody to want to live in Decatur, and hopefully this will encourage people to think about it more," Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said after the meeting. In other business, the council voted to sell a vacant lot at 1022 West Macon Street to Decatur Pilot, a nonprofit arm of the Decatur Housing Authority. The sale will help facilitate a new development planned for later this year. The Housing Authority plans to use $2 million from a national foreclosure settlement to build 8 new energy-efficient homes in the Oakwood area. The intention is to sell the homes to moderate-income residents who qualify for mortgages, then reinvest proceeds into the program. Jim Alpe, executive director of the Housing Authority, fielded questions from the council before the vote about how the program would work. "It is meant to help revitalize an area that might not otherwise attract the investment of new homes," he said. Speaking after the meeting, Moore Wolf reiterated city leaders' desire to address falling property values in Decatur. Quote, "This looks like a great opportunity in a pretty stable neighborhood to be able to put some more homeowners in there that will be qualified, that will be able to take care of their homes and be proud to be homeowners in Decatur," she said. Gleason said it was good to take advantage of what he described as a pocket of opportunity. Quote, "I think all of us are holding our breath a little bit on what the outcome is actually going to be, but it's nice that we have this opportunity," he said. Also on page 3 is this article by Valerie Wells about education. Headline reads, "Decatur Science Investigation Turns Up Action at Franklin School." Every kid in the auditorium at Franklin School recently was mesmerized by the fire extinguisher rocket car, but only Arcarius Calloway was lucky enough to drive it. Quote, "This is Rocket Man," said Nola Wilkinson, a retired teacher who runs Decatur Science Investigation with her husband, Harold, a retired biology professor, and as she phrased it, a real scientist. The couple has presented science assemblies for Decatur schools for several years, and this year's theme is physics. "If the gas goes this way," she pointed to the rear of the car, this is Nola Wilkinson speaking, "which way will the car go?" Most of the students correctly guessed the opposite way. The way the rocket car works is a child sits in the seat and the fire extinguisher hose runs under the seat and out the back. By pressing on the lever, the car is propelled across the room. Normally, the assemblies are held in the school gym, with plenty of room available for that propelling. But Franklin's show was in the auditorium, and Arcarius zoomed across the stage and crashed into Nola Wilkinson. Both were unhurt and laughed. But the Wilkinsons decided moving the testing ground to the aisle would work out a little better. And Arcarius learned from his maiden voyage and was much more controlled, though still noisy and fast, in his second ride. Making science fun is the point of the DSI team, funded by the Decatur Public Schools Foundation. Last year's shows were about chemistry and included an explosion at the end, thanks to nitrogen and other chemicals. The chemistry show was pretty messy. Harold Wilkinson said with a chuckle, and the physics show isn't. Plus, it's easier to transport around and doesn't require replenishing chemical supplies. First, they introduce the kids to Sir Isaac Newton and his three laws: inertia, acceleration, and for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Nola Wilkinson chose a girl and a teacher from the audience and asked for two strong boys to volunteer. One boy pushed the girl in a chair, and the other pushed the teacher in a race, and she asked the kids which one they thought would win. Again, they chose correctly. The boy pushing the little girl, because the larger the object, the more force it takes to move it. Another child got to ride a hovercraft powered by a leaf blower, which Harold Wilkinson acquired and rebuilt. We aren't involved with Millikan like we were before, he said, so we're basically running solo. The foundation grant expired a year ago, but they had some money left over, and Executive Director Zach Shields persuaded the board to let us spend it. We can do this for another year, and we'll be out of money, and we'll be too old, Nola Wilkinson quipped. I regret that there are no photographs accompanying this article, because I would have loved to describe to you these intriguing devices that were shown to the youngsters at Franklin this last week. Ryan Voiles writes this article, Mount Zion to shut off plans for water rate increase. Sound Finances and the Village's Water Fund has Mount Zion officials ready to drop a planned rate increase. Village trustees voted unanimously to abate a 2.5% increase in the water rate during Monday night's meeting. Quote, with the current fund balance, we're fine there, Village Administrator Julie Miller said. I don't feel like an increase was necessary. As established, the village's water ordinance has the water rate automatically increased by 2.5% every May 1st, unless the board votes to abate the increase for the full year. Despite the upcoming water tower project and the additional costs associated with it, a little more than $3 million, Miller said the village could make do this year with what is on hand. The current balance in the water fund is $725,000. The sewer fund is not included in the ordinance, and that will be talked about at a future meeting. In other business, the board voted unanimously to purchase several vehicles and accessories for the Public Works Department. The purchase includes a plow truck, utility tractor, and a hydraulic hammer. The equipment have a combined cost of $53,400. The 2016 F-350 pickup with plow were budgeted during the past fiscal year, but the purchase was put on hold due to the state's budget impasse. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the May 3rd issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.